Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty. Millie is with us today. We'll see when she gets into the proceedings here. She may have something to say. She may not. We'll just have to wait and see. We have plenty to say. I can promise you that. Another busy week around college baseball. We got conference play started in the SEC and the Big 12. That was exciting. And really, one of the things, Peter, that happened over the last week is that one of the biggest things is there was just kind of a shakeup in the top 25 for the first time. We brought five new teams into the rankings, which means five teams left the rankings. We hadn't had a week like that yet this season. It had been a little bit chalky early in the season. And of course, early on, we're also, you know, we don't want to go too crazy with the rankings off of one or two weekends. But, you know, we've seen more than a month of college baseball now. So it's time to, you know, you start understanding more about these teams and you're able to better react to the results on the field. So we brought five teams in this week. We brought Missouri, Campbell, Iowa, UC Santa Barbara, and Kentucky all into the top 25. Missouri, of course, with a big series sweep at Tennessee. Campbell and Iowa have been, and UCSB have been really consistent this season. Kentucky coming off of a 15-game winning streak. A lot to be excited about there. And so there's a bit of a new look at the top 25. Not necessarily if you look at the top of the rankings, it's still number one, LSU, number two, Florida, just like it's been for much of the season now. But we've got some new blood in there. And Peter, that made for a bit tougher of a meeting when we had to rank these teams. But it does make it a little bit more exciting when you're able to bring some new blood into the top 25.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, there was a lot of discussion about who to bring in and where to slot them. But, you know, a team like Kentucky has won 15 games in a row, which is best for, you know, most wins in a row in the country. And really up until this past weekend against Mississippi State, they had, at least I think in the national scope, had flown under the radar without kind of a big marquee win. They had dismantled teams. They had beaten Southern Illinois by, you know, 18 runs and 6 runs in a weekend, and they'd beaten a Big Ten opponent in Indiana by 10. But up until this series sweep of Mississippi State, they had flown under the radar. Missouri kind of burst onto the scene with that sweep of Tennessee, and they did so not with, I wouldn't say ease, because I don't think sweeping Tennessee is ever easy, no matter what the box score looks like. But they were in control for the entire weekend, and then UC Santa Barbara's on a 10-game winning streak of their own. Campbell's played outstanding baseball. So there are a lot of new faces. It's an exciting look to our top 25. I think it creates for, you know, a lot of fun going forward following these games, which I think will also lead to some more shuffling as these polls get, I wouldn't say a bit more reactionary, but I think that there'll be more week to week change, which always is a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. As we move more into the season, it becomes less about what we think about teams, what we might project for teams. That's what the preseason is. It's just a projection. And then as we go deeper and deeper into the season, it becomes less and less about that and much more about, okay, but what actually, who actually won the game, not maybe who should have won the game or who we think is going to win the game. It's just about who the actual on-field results. And that's always an interesting shift as we go through it. And let's get to one of those big things you mentioned there, Missouri sweeping Tennessee. That was really as stunning of a result as we've had this season. You had Tennessee, the reigning SEC champs, getting swept by a team that finished last in the SEC East the season before. And that's how they start conference play. And it was a kind of a weird weekend. They had to play a doubleheader on Sunday. There was bad weather. It was cold in Columbia. None of that is to excuse anything. Everything was a little different, but Missouri really went out and they got to Tennessee's starters in a way that rotation, which has been the same rotation now for more than a year, basically, they had never been hit like that before. And Missouri silenced the Tennessee bats pretty well all weekend, and that's not easy to do either. They threw a one-hitter. It was a 7-8 game, but they threw a one-hitter in the finale. That's not something that happens often to the Vols. Or hardly ever. Mizzou, up until that weekend, they came into the weekend with a really nice record. They played well on opening weekend. they had gone 2-1 down in Arlington, but it was overshadowed by almost everything else that had happened that weekend. Nothing overshadowed what they did this weekend. And I mean, that was really the, like I said, that was for me the loudest result so far this season.
Yeah, that was super impressive. They outscored Tennessee, I think it was 23-6 over the course of three games, and it really wasn't all that close. You know, a couple of the games were pretty close to the first third of the game, but Missouri used, it felt like one big inning in each of the three games that they used to kind of propel them to a win. They jumped on Chase Dolander immediately in the first game of that series, and they tagged him for 9 hits, 6 runs. They only struck out 4 times. I was really impressed with their approach all weekend. And then they coupled that with kind of avoiding getting into a shootout with the Tennessee offense that's more than comfortable doing so. Guys like Chandler Murphy and Austin Trozor were great on the mound in their respective starts, as was Zach Franklin, who finished off the sweep. He piggybacked off of Ian Loesch on Sunday's second game of the doubleheader, threw 5 innings, allowed only 1 earned, and notched 6 strikeouts. So I think that Missouri, obviously, after this weekend, is a team that's going to be a real force to be reckoned with in the SEC. I think they showed that they can throw really well, and they can also hit. So this weekend series with South Carolina is going to be a good litmus test for them against another super high powered offense. But like you, I'm really impressed with the Tigers.
So I said we have 5 teams coming this week: Missouri, Campbell, Iowa, UCSB, and Kentucky. I think it's safe to say that both Peter and I are most excited about what Missouri did most recently, what their resume says right now. That's why they're ranked the highest of those teams. They come in at number 18. But Peter, when we look ahead, looking to the future, which one of these teams are you most excited about for the rest of the season?
That's a great question. Of the 5 new teams, I think I'm probably most excited actually about Iowa. I think that to go deep and to kind of establish yourself as one of these Cinderella teams in Omaha, where people look up and they're like, whoa, you know, how did an Iowa or a Kentucky or Campbell make it to the Final Eight in Omaha? It's often done on deep pitching. And that's exactly what Iowa has. They have Brody Brecht, who for my money's worth has the best pure stuff in the country. He might not have the command yet to boot, but I think he's got the best stuff. And then Ty Langenberg, who's actually been, I think both in his mind and what people were expecting, has been a little underwhelming to start off the 2023 season. And then you also pair them with Marcus Morgan, who is a huge stuff guy like Brecht, doesn't quite have the triple digit fastball, but he's got a plus slider, fastball up to 97. And he's continuing to work through those growing pains in the command department. But I'm probably most excited about Iowa. And I know it could be a little bit of a hot take. They're a cold weather team. They're in the Big Ten. But I think for a team that's I think they're best suited for a deep run. And then they're closely followed, in my mind, by Kentucky, who I don't want to speak for you. But I think if I were to ask you that question, they'd probably be who you're most excited about.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying about Iowa, I agree with in many respects. I like the way that they're set up for the rest of the season. I think that they're the best team in the Big Ten. As we look at it today, I was really excited about Maryland coming into the year, but I flipped those teams in my mind. Maryland has not gotten off to a good start on the mound. Iowa looks really, really strong on the mound, and I think they have enough offense to carry it through. And look, they're one of 2 teams that's beating LSU to this point. You know, it's them and A&M, and more teams will eventually add wins against LSU. There will be more losses that the Tigers take along the way, but Iowa right now, one of just 2 teams that's been able to do that. And they also have a win at Lubbock. And like, I think it was a big missed opportunity that they didn't win the series at Texas Tech. I'm not saying they should have. I just like, that was a missed opportunity to really plant your flag, but they do have a win in on the road against Texas Tech. And that, again, not easy to do. So I like where they are in the long run. But Kentucky right now has won 15 straight. It's the longest winning streak of the year for anyone in the country. They have been really good on the mound. And, you know, that's one of the things that has stood out to me the most and feels like it's repeatable throughout the rest of the season. Just the way that they've been able to pitch. They're a team that right now ranks 10th in the country in ERA. I think that's good for fourth in the SEC. And, you know, Kentucky's schedule is not Vanderbilt's schedule, but it's also not been terribly easy. And they're sitting there at 19-2. And I think that in the end, some of these series wins that don't look like they don't stand out now, but they're going to end up being good for them and good RPI series for them. Like they have a series win against or on the road at Elon, and Elon is off to a 13-8 start and looks like they might be able to compete in the Colonial, even if they're not going to win the Colonial. You know, we'll have to see, but I they don't look like the best team in the Colonial, but they look like a team that's going to be solid all season. And Kentucky has a series win against Wright State and Indiana State and at Southern Illinois. And, you know, again, none of these are really the marquee one that makes a lot of noise, but I think in the end, this is going to be a lot of really good wins on the resume. And I also love the way Kentucky starts SEC play. Like, no week is easy in the SEC, and that's what last weekend showed. Just ask Tennessee. But Kentucky, now that they've swept Mississippi State to start the year, they go to Alabama, and then they are home against Missouri. They're at Georgia. And like, as first months go in the SEC for a team like Kentucky, I feel like that's about as good as you can ask for. And if they're able to take advantage of that, bank some of these wins early, I really like where the Wildcats could be as we reach the midpoint and beyond of this season.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you make about the schedule. There's, again, there's no easy weekend. There's no easy night in the SEC, but you can kind of, I don't want to say ease into it because you're looking at a road series at Georgia, a ranked Missouri team who is looking like a regional team and at Bama. But I think that it's a great opportunity for them to get polished and really hit their stride if they haven't done so yet. It's certainly looking like they has, but I wouldn't say they've peaked by any stretch of the imagination. But then you go into a kind of a gauntlet with LSU, A&M, a midweek against Louisville, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and Tennessee and Florida to close out the season. So, I mean, now is the time, like you said, these are really valuable series wins, not just in conference play. If they can ever stack up a couple more with Bama and Missouri and Georgia, if they can somehow win two of those three series or three of those three series, they're going to have to play themselves out of a regional come May. But like you said, those early season series wins against Elon, Wright State, who's a quality club in the Horizon League, they kind of snowball and beef up your resume when push comes to shove. So I think that this Kentucky team is different than in years past, that we've seen them get off to these hot starts and fall off, similar to actually Boston College. But I think that this team is much better suited for a sustainable run. Like you said, their pitching has been outstanding. They've got a 2.89 team ERA, 203 strikeouts in 184 innings pitched. And I'm really excited about the Wildcats. And I think that I'm looking forward to these upcoming series, but I'm even more excited to see how they stack up, you know, going down to Baton Rouge and seeing how they play against, you know, I think the class of college baseball.
Yeah, if they're going to, you know, be more than a middle of the pack kind of bubbly team, they are going to have to eventually beat one of those teams, not necessarily LSU, but one of those better teams on the schedule. So it will be good to get a litmus test against some of those teams as they move forward. And this weekend at Alabama is no easy feat. This weekend's SEC schedule is truly fascinating to me. And we're going to get into that a little bit here in a second, but I don't want to give short shrift to UCSB, a team that I've been kind of like itching to rank going all the way back to the preseason. Just they finally now break into the rankings, and UCSB just keeps doing the same thing that they do every year. It seems like they're looking like the class of the Big West, and they've like Gutierrez has, you know, slid into the Friday spot and pitched really well for them, and the Gauchos continue to pitch really well. And I guess it would be fair then, as you know, an outsider, if you're sitting there and asking, okay, so what's different about this year's team versus last year's team or the year before's team? And, you know, they haven't been able to make it out of a regional these last few years. And, you know, I think that's a fair question to ask. And, you know, that's why that's not the team I listed as the team I'm most excited about. And then, you know, Campbell has been incredible offensively to this point, and we know that they have some really talented arms. It feels like everything hasn't really clicked yet for the Camels, and yet they're out there winning games, and they've been able to roll some nice wins up, and they're probably going to roll right through the Big South. So until we get into a regional, it's going to be a little bit hard to truly evaluate what Campbell is, but I do think that they have the potential to really make some noise in June if they're able to get the right draw and if they're feeling it coming into the tournament.
No doubt. And I think Campbell's a great team, a great example too of a team that they play with a chip on their shoulder for the entirety of their schedule. I think that they feel that they're overlooked, they're underrated, and quite frankly, they just kind of get the short end of the stick when it comes to national attention. And I think that they're a roster full of just kind of baseball rats and grinders. They don't have necessarily the most prospecty look on offense this year. They obviously lose Zach Neto, who's outstanding. They lost him last year on the offense, and then Thomas Harrington on the pitching staff. But their pitching staff, again, they've got the headliner with Cade Kuehler, and then they've got great bullpen arms with Ty Cummings, Cam O'Brien, Aaron Run. So like you said, this is a team that's probably going to roll right through the Big South. I would not want to face them in a regional. Last year was a bit of a bummer, I think, with them getting sent to the Tennessee regional. Not a bummer in the sense that it made for some really enticing matchups with them and Georgia Tech and Tennessee all in the same regional. But I think that if they were anywhere else or had a different matchup, that this could have been a team that really would have gotten rolling and could have been a sleeper for Omaha. And I feel pretty similar about this year's club. They can really swing it. They throw the ball well, and they're going to be hot going into tournament play. And going back a little bit to UCSB, they're a team built on pitching. They really only had one stinker of a game this year of their three losses. They lost 11-0 to Oregon State, which has kind of just been a one-off result to this point.
It was also the fourth game of opening weekend. You know, they'd thrown a lot of arms at that point, and I'm willing to kind of throw that one aside.
Right, exactly. And it's essentially a meaningless game. And other than that, they've lost just two one-run ball games. Their pitching has been the calling card with guys like Matt Agere, Mike Gutierrez. Freshman Tyler Bremner has looked really good early on. He's got 30 Ks to three walks in 18 innings. He's kind of looking like the next stud arm to be produced out of UCSB. Offensively, they lag a little bit behind other of those, I guess, just high-powered offenses, but they are hitting .280 as a team. Ivan Breithauer is extremely fun to watch. He's 6'6", outfielder, pulverizes the baseball with big-time bat speed, and I'm not going to make the comp that everyone's thinking about with a 6'6 outfielder, so I'll just leave it be, but they're a really exciting team. They don't get they don't get a ton of love because they're out west, and people just don't really stay up to watch them. I think the average college baseball fan, I think, might just hit the hay before they play. But I think come regional play, they're going to have to pitch their way through regional and into a potential Omaha slot. But again, this is a team that I'm really excited about. I know you are, and their pitching puts them in a great spot for a potential postseason run.
They have really just become the most consistent team in the Big West. There are other good teams in that conference, but UCSB just seems like they're operating at a different level and has been for a couple of years now. We mentioned the way the SEC schedule started last week, and there wound up being five sweeps on the weekend in the SEC. That is very rare. We don't typically see sweeps in conference play to that level, really in any league, but especially not in the SEC. You don't expect five of the seven series to be sweeps. So the teams that are starting SEC play 0-3 now are Auburn, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Tennessee. This is like the first time Ole Miss and Mississippi State are both 0-3 to start the SEC since I don't have the exact year in front of me, but I know it's been more than 60 years. Just an incredible thing that's happening now when those are the last two teams to win national championships. But anyway, of those five teams, Peter, who are you most concerned for now moving forward?
In looking at these five teams, I think I'm least worried about Tennessee, and I think that's relatively an easy answer. I don't know if they're necessarily of the caliber they were last year, which is a very, very high bar to set. But I think this weekend they just ran into a buzzsaw and a hot team that is Missouri. And looking back on that series come Selection Monday, I really don't think we'll look like that bad of a loss on paper. Everyone has off weekends. It's clear they had one. The coach Vitello did kind of a factory reset, if you want to call it that, yesterday in their midweek against Western Carolina. I don't want to say bench and get into the nuances of that, but they had a new look starting lineup. They had eight guys who aren't regulars in there, with the only one regular being first baseman Blake Burke. So I'm not too worried about the Volunteers. I think their pitching staff is outstanding. The offense is still high powered, and they're gonna hit their stride. But I'm probably most worried about Mississippi State. This is the second year in a row where last year they obviously don't make a regional. Last year they got off to a slow start and everyone's kind of waiting for them to get going, and they just never did. Their record is a little bit better than it was at this point last year, but in looking at their schedule, they don't really have a marquee win. I think that their best series win is against Arizona State at home in the second
week. Yeah, that's definitely right.
It's a good series win. A Pac-12 win is a nice kind of, it's a fine series win, but it's nothing that's going to move the needle. And then they're fresh off a sweep against Kentucky. They had a nice midweek result against Arkansas State, which I am not going to put much stock into. And then you look at their SEC schedule. They've got Vandy this weekend, South Carolina next weekend, Bama, Ole Miss. They don't really have I think the last month of the season, give or take, is going to determine their fate with those series against Tennessee, Arkansas, LSU, and A&M in consecutive weekends. But I don't know. The pitching has been really, really, I think, inconsistent to start the year. They don't really have a big Durant. Two freshmen have been their best starters, I think, Lofton on weekdays, and then Gerangelo Sahente on weekends has been great. But other than that, they lack a lot of pitching depth, both in the bullpen outside of Nate Dome, and in their rotation. So I'm probably most concerned about the Bulldogs. I just don't think in an SEC that's looking like as good as it's ever been, or as good as it's been in recent memory this year, I just don't think that they're going to have the stamina or firepower on either side of the baseball to keep pace with these teams. And if you're looking at like a Kentucky or a Missouri, I think that they're a decent ways away from looking like that type of a club.
So I think that's completely reasonable to call out Mississippi State as the team you're most concerned about. This is now, you know, kind of 2 years in a row, and even when things have been going well this year, it's been very stop and go, stutter step, kind of, you know, like, okay, yes, they won that series against Arizona State, but that came after they lost 13-4 on Friday night, and everybody was wondering what was wrong with them. And, you know, okay, they have a midweek win against Southern Miss, but then they weren't able to build on that, and they went to Frisco and lost to Ohio State and Oklahoma before winning the third game against Cal. And so it's just been a lot of up and down, not very consistent. Now, if you want to take the sunnier side of things at Mississippi State, it's that they were up. So they lose on Friday in extra innings and in 10 innings to start that series against Kentucky. They were up 5-4 going into the eighth and couldn't hold it. You know, so they're right there to win the game. And I mean, you have to go win it, but they're right there to win the game. Mm-hmm. And then game two, they do lose 12-3, and that looks really bad. It got kind of out of control late, though. They had an early lead in that game. You know, it was early, but they're up 3-0 in the fourth before Kentucky scored the next 12 runs. And then the Sunday game, everything went bad. So if you look at it and you say, well, like, if you just win on Friday night, things are going to feel a little bit differently. And maybe you had a shot if you win on Friday, maybe you have a shot to, you know, come out and feel better on Saturday. So you can kind of talk yourself into how maybe they'll be able to figure this thing out. And there's still so many transfers there, so much new there, that as they move forward, maybe they'll be able to get into a better spot. But right now it's not really where you want to be. And then of course, Tennessee, because Tennessee has all the talent, like I think it's fair. And like, they don't have significant injuries. You know, Ole Miss, we ranked really high coming into the year, but right now without Hunter Elliott, something clearly is missing there. And so until they get Hunter Elliott back, it's hard to feel as good about Ole Miss as you can feel about Tennessee. You just kind of trust the talent. I do want to, though, you know, if we just set Mississippi State aside, I would be also pretty concerned about Georgia. Of the five teams that got swept, four of them went on the road and got swept. Auburn went to Arkansas and got swept. Ole Miss was at Vanderbilt. Mississippi State was at Kentucky. Tennessee was at Mizzou. It happened to Georgia at home. South Carolina came into Athens and swept Georgia. And now Georgia was a team that coming into the year I felt was like kind of a bubble team. And if you look at the projected field of 64 in the preseason, I had them bubble out. But bubble out team, like if you're a bubbly team, you can't be getting swept at home. South Carolina's really good. South Carolina's playing as hot as anyone is in the country right now, basically. But you can't be getting swept at home. That can't be what happens. And so now Georgia has to turn around and they go to Auburn this week. And that's a tough, tricky weekend. And both of those teams really need it for different reasons. But like, now you have to go on the road, whereas everybody else, like, well, at least it happened on the road. So that is my concern about Georgia moving forward, is that you only get five home weekends in the SEC, and they took a goose egg in the win column on one of them.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, this weekend series against Auburn is a little bit like last weekend series out west with Oregon State and Stanford, but I think it's magnified even more because one of these teams is going to be coming out of this weekend at worst 0-6 in the SEC, but the loser of the series at best is going to be 1-5 in the SEC through the first two weekends. And it leaves you a pretty big hole to climb out of when looking at both Auburn and Georgia. And like you said, South Carolina is a great team, but the outside of the Friday game, or I guess the Saturday game, the first game of the Saturday doubleheader, it was a pretty non-competitive series. South Carolina came back and won on that first game and Saturday with a Michael Braswell double, but the second game and the third game, they got outscored by a margin of 24-3. So I think this weekend is pretty close to a must win for the Dogs before they again head to Vandy and then Kentucky, just really just begin that SEC gauntlet. And outside of Charlie Condon and Connor Tate, Parks Harbor has been great. And so has Mason LaPlante and Ben Anderson, but they're still kind of looking for production, and then their pitching hasn't been up to snuff so far. So I think both Georgia and Mississippi State, there's cause for concern for their own respective reasons. But I might have a little bit of more faith in the Dogs, just given their 1-2 punch on the weekends with Liam Sullivan and Jaden Woods at the front of the rotation. I don't think you can look at a Mississippi State and say that they have the same. And then Matthew Hoskins, the freshman out of the bullpen, has been outstanding with an upper 90s fastball. So I might have a little bit of more faith in the Dogs, but they're each in a precarious position to begin conference play.
No doubt about that. One last thing on last week before we look ahead to this week. We talked about the Big 12 starting with such a big series between Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, a series that has the potential to really kind of decide the Big 12 race potentially. And they played it opening weekend, and Texas Tech went out and won the series. The first two games were split. Texas Tech had to come back and win on Friday night, but they did that. Oklahoma State evened the series on Saturday, and then Texas Tech blew out Oklahoma State on Sunday to win the series for like the 25th straight time. I think it's actually their sixth straight series win against the Pokes. But they now, to me, Peter, it feels like the Big 12 race absolutely is going to go through Lubbock. You know, they've already taken care of Oklahoma State, a team that we feel very strongly about as being a solid team, a team that came into this weekend looking really good. TCU, which was the preseason favorite, they lost a series at Oklahoma. Not a great start for the Frogs, which have been very up and down since opening weekend. You know, West Virginia and Oklahoma both look good, but are not juggernauts. Texas has been playing really well since losing a series at Fullerton, but again, like it's been a mixed bag to start the season. I mean, I'm not going to crown Texas Tech as the Big 12 champions today on March 22nd, but I will say that I think if you're trying to win the Big 12 this year, you're going to have to go out and beat Texas Tech. And that's great news for the Red Raiders. That's how I'm feeling right now. Probably not as great news for the rest of the Big 12 that, you know, is looking at, you know, Tech and thinking that, well, maybe this year they might take a step back. They just lost so many guys. Like, no, there's no step back coming. They still look like the best team in the conference.
Yeah, I'm with you totally. I was going into this weekend or this past weekend with the mentality of whoever was going to win this series is probably the class of the Big 12, and it's them and everyone else. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's Texas Tech and everyone else. I think Oklahoma State is still right there with them. But like you said, I think no doubt the road to the Big 12 championship is going to go through Lubbock. They will have to kind of prove themselves on the road, though. They go to Oklahoma, and then they go to West Virginia on the second to last weekend of the season. But they're a team, again, they've been outstanding, where people can kind of say they lost a lot. But they've had a couple of transfers step up in their wake. Gavin Cash has been unbelievable to start the season. He transferred from Texas. He's hitting 440 with 7 doubles, 7 home runs. Freshman Gage Harrelson's been great in the outfield in an everyday role, hitting 340, 11 doubles. He's a great runner. He's a guy that I'm excited about going forward as a draft prospect. And then Kevin Bazell, who came from DBU, he's been outstanding. He was a guy that he had piqued my interest last year after his last fall at Dallas Baptist. There were glowing reports on him, and he decided to enter the transfer portal. And he's off to a great start, also hitting 340, 9 doubles, 3 home runs. He's walking more than he's walking at twice the rate as he's striking out, with 20 walks to just 9 Ks. And then Mason Molina, the left-hander, has been the headliner on the mound. They've also done so with great pitching out of the bullpen with Brandon Beckel, Andrew Devine, and then Brendan Gurton is a good arm talent too. So again, it's a really good club. It's a complete team. And as Oklahoma State proved, going to Lubbock and winning a series is a very, very difficult task for any team in the country. We saw with Oklahoma State, we saw with Iowa, and they handled a good Iowa team. They were incredibly close to sweeping them. They lost a 1-run ball game in the Sunday finale, but make no mistake about it. That's a regional caliber Iowa team. That's probably an Iowa team that's on the bubble to maybe even host, depending on how the Big Ten schedule shakes out. So after their little hiccup at the Shriners Children's Classic, they've played outstanding baseball, and I don't think there's any slowing down the Red Raiders.
All right, so we're going to turn our attention to this weekend, another great weekend of college baseball coming up here. But first, check this out. All right, we're going to turn our attention to this weekend. Peter, let's head out west. We haven't actually talked much West Coast, I would say really the last couple of weeks, but let's start this out west. The two series I'm about to mention are maybe not the highest profile series you'll see on this weekend slate. Like that's definitely LSU Arkansas, and we'll get to talking about Miami and Wake Forest here in a bit. But I don't know; these are kind of nice under the radar series, and it's going to be a big weekend in LA as you've got USC taking on Washington State and UCLA taking on Washington. UCLA off to just a sensational start. They're into the top 10 now. They, you know, your mileage might vary, but for me, they're probably the team to beat in the Pac-12. I'm ready to elevate them over Stanford. Not everybody will be, I'm sure, but I'll take the Bruins right now as the Pac-12 favorite. Meanwhile, Washington off to a great start. That's a team that Peter was on in the preseason as being an intriguing team to watch. And so far, they are living up to that. And then you have USC, which has won its first two Pac-12 series and is looking for three in a row against a plucky Washington State team that did lose a series at Oregon last weekend. But this is a really intriguing series because one of these teams is going to come out feeling pretty good about themselves and positioning themselves in an intriguing way early on in the Pac-12 standings. The other one is going to be in a little less of an advantageous position. So a lot on the line there with both of those series.
Yeah, there are two that I think that they'll fly under the radar, but they do have pretty big implications going forward in the Pac-12. I think starting off with UCLA and Washington, this is going to be a great test for Washington. Like you said, they were a team that I was high on coming into the season, and this is going to be their first kind of marquee series of the year. They're, I think, 14-4, and they won a series against Rhode Island. They had a little bit of trouble. They lost the Friday night game, and then Rhode Island was able to score on them a little bit, but they still won that series. They looked really good in their first Pac-12 series against Utah. But up to this point, this is going to be a massive, massive test for the Huskies, and it's far from a make or break series for them. They're still going to be barring some insane result, they're still going to be in the regional conversation, but they're going to get, for my money's worth and your money's worth, the best team in the Pac-12 in USC and UCLA. But you know, going to the other team in LA, USC, they're a very, I think, just sneaky team. They're 10-8-1 with that weird tie at Auburn. But their eight losses, if you look at their eight losses, they've been in every single game that they've played this year. And if you look at their box scores and their stats, no one's going to jump out at you. They're hitting .279 as a team. Freshman Austin Overn has been really good. He's a dual sport athlete at USC. He's tooled up 8 triples on the year. And their pitching has been, I'd say, pretty modest so far. Their rotation's ERA is north of, I think, 6. But they've just done it on timely hitting. They've gotten arms to step up when they've needed to. And a series win against Washington State, I think, would go a really long way for them. And it's a good momentum builder, because if you're looking at USC after this weekend, if they were to beat Washington State, they head into a midweek game against UC Irvine, which would be a quality win for them on the road. And then another winnable series at Utah, followed by what I think is a good series for them against San Diego State before they head out to Oregon State. So there's a real opportunity here for USC to, I don't want to get too drastic, but I think there's an opportunity here for them to work their way and muscle their way into a bubble tournament team if the dominoes fall their way and they can really hit their stride in the next few weeks. So again, it's a series that's going to fly under the radar. Washington State's a good club. They're a little bit of a rut. They've lost 3 of their last 4. Their pitching has been inconsistent in that stretch. But I'd be particularly intrigued with a UCLA series win. They will have officially piqued my interest.
By winning that series at the start of Pac-12 play against Stanford, USC really kind of flipped the script, made this a very manageable start to Pac-12 play, to the point that, yeah, like, they have a chance here to really build some momentum. The middle part of the schedule is tricky. It's at Oregon State, home to UCLA, at Washington, and then, you know, things ease up a little bit because they get a couple of home series again. But if they can stack some wins here early, like, this is a team that just has been truly abysmal for several years now in Pac-12 play, to the point that when it was announced that USC and UCLA were moving to the Big Ten, I wrote that, you know what, just like literally anything would be good for USC, because trying to like rebuild the program while in the Pac-12 hasn't worked for like 15 years. So maybe going to the Big Ten will it doesn't even matter. Like we can talk about what this is going to do to UCLA, what this is going to mean for UCLA, but for USC, they just need the easier runway. But right now, they're playing really well. They have a chance to really turn things around. This is a team that hasn't made the tournament or had a winning record in Pac-12 play since 2015. And they're starting to turn me into a little bit of a believer, and that maybe they can do something this year. And another series win this weekend would really help things along in that regard. So USC, you have my attention. Let's flip around to the East Coast now. Two teams that definitely have our attention. Miami is heading to Winston-Salem to take on Wake Forest. First of all, runs are definitely going to be scored in this series. I expect the ball to be jumping. It's an offensive ballpark to begin with. And Miami and Wake Forest can swing the bats a little bit here. So I think that is exciting. If you like offense, if you like home runs, I think this series is for you this weekend. But I don't want to discredit either of the pitching staffs or just the overall. Like, I think this could be a really intriguing series all the way around. Miami has found a really good form over the last 2 weeks, beating NC State and Virginia Tech. Wake Forest on the road is a different animal. Miami has not fared well on the road to this point, but to this point, most of their road games have come in Gainesville. So, they do have experience playing in a tough series on the road, and maybe that'll help them this weekend in Winston-Salem. Wake Forest, meanwhile, is going to face an opponent that has probably more offensive firepower than they have seen yet. So a good test for their arms. Not that we doubt guys like Rhett Lauder, but this is going to be a good test for them.
Yeah, and following their midweek loss against Jacksonville and prior to their weekend series with NC State, we had talked about Miami as a team that early on was kind of on the ropes, where, if they had dropped that weekend series against NC State, they could have really gone into a tailspin, but they completely turned their season around. They won 2 of 3 before another nice win at Florida International, and then a really impressive win series sweep this weekend against previously number 15 Virginia Tech. And this is a clash of two of the better teams in the ACC. This will be Wake's biggest test, like you said, by a pretty wide margin. They've been on just, it seems like, cruise control to start 2023, and their pitching staff is outstanding. It's going to, with that staff of Rhett Lauder, Sullivan, and Hartle, Miami's offense is going to have their hands full, but it's also a Miami offense that has really hit their stride of late. Yo-Yo Morales is the headliner there, obviously, followed by Zach Levinson, who's been really good, to the tune of a .360 batting average, 6 doubles, 4 home runs. CJ Cephas went 12 for 16 this past weekend, and he kind of dug himself out of a big hole, raising his average over 100 points. And then you look at their supporting cast. Ian Farrow has 5 home runs. Freshman Blake Sear has been, statistically, average-wise, the Canes' best hitter. And their pitching staff has come on as of late. Gage Zeal was a guy that we talked about who we were waiting for that really good start from Zeal and for him to kickstart his season. And he's done just that, turning in 2 quality starts in a row against good offenses. So, like you said, there will be a lot of scoring in this series. The couch is an absolute airport where the ball just flies. But I'm very curious to see, kind of, I guess, on a lesser scale than LSU last week with, okay, like, how good is LSU? Like, are they going to go down to A&M and continue to dominate, which we'll talk about that probably later. But Wake has been so dominant to start the season. They're 19-3. They're a complete ball club. I think that this weekend is going to be a good, I guess, okay, how good are you type of weekend where they face a good offense in Miami. They're going to face multiple pro prospects on the mound with Carson Ligon, Gage Zeal, Alejandro Rosario's numbers are really not that good, to be blunt, but he has good stuff. Andrew Walters in the back end. So how is that Wake offense, who is mashed to start the year, how will they manage against Miami? And then also on the flip side, we've seen Lauder and Sullivan and Hartle just carve their way through the 2023 season, but how will they do against the lineup that also features 4 to 5 pro prospects? So this will be a really fun series. I think the ball is going to be jumping, like you said, and I think that the winner of this is going to establish some big time momentum as they head into the meat of their conference schedule.
These teams have both hit 45 home runs. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about these offenses. And, you know, right now Miami is in first place in the ACC. They're sitting at 5-1. Wake Forest is at 4-2. You know, there's kind of a bunched middle in the ACC. And both of these teams have been able to avoid that so far. And the loser is not going to get dragged down into it unless they get swept. But, you know, I do think there is already some stratification going on to a certain extent. And these two teams look like two of the best ones. So definitely a series to watch. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of scouts in to see this one with so much talent and the ability to see some of these top hitters against top pitchers, particularly. I think that makes this a really attractive series, no matter how you slice this. If you're into just seeing some great performances, I think you're going to see those. If you're into seeing, you know, high end, intense, you know, games with something on the line, I think we've got a good shot at seeing that this weekend as well. In the SEC this weekend, I could make a case that just about any of these series is absolutely fascinating. You know, you have A&M and Tennessee. A&M went 1-2. Tennessee got swept last weekend. Both of those teams are going to be eager to course correct in Knoxville this weekend. Florida, which you know, is going on the road to Ole Miss, two of the better offenses out there, and of course Ole Miss trying to bounce back. We talked a little bit about Kentucky and Alabama, Georgia and Auburn. Mizzou, 3-0, goes to South Carolina, 3-0. Can Mizzou build off of last week? Can South Carolina get to the Mizzou arms? Like, now becomes an intriguing question. And Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, Vanderbilt looking to build on their 3-0 start, and Mississippi State really needs a response this weekend, or else all of a sudden everything is going to get louder than it already is in Starkville. And also you're going to have dug yourself a pretty big hole. But the series is Arkansas and LSU, always a special series, two great teams in the SEC West. They both come in at 19-2. LSU has played up to the hype probably to this point. Arkansas, although I'm sure some people thought they would be 21-0, but whatever. Arkansas has been super hot. They've really responded to every injury that's been thrown at them, everything that's been thrown at them. They just keep on chugging. And that's going to be really fun, this really fun one this weekend at Alex Box Stadium.
Yeah, that's going to have the environment of like a super fight in Las Vegas. It's going to be unbelievable atmosphere wise. Arkansas is 19-2, winners of 14 in a row. They've been outstanding in all facets to start the year on the mound. Hunter Holland's been great. So has Will McIntyre. Hagan Smith, who actually made a couple appearances out of the bullpen this past weekend, was lights out of the bullpen. And then, like you said, they've had to deal with injuries with Cody Frank. Brady Tigert's been on the shelf for a little while. And
Wiggins to start the year, of course.
Yeah, Wiggins, obviously the headliner out with Tommy John. But everyone has just kind of stepped up and risen to the occasion. So, and offensively, they're really swinging the bat well. Jace Borfin was a guy that, after his true freshman year at Oklahoma in 21, was a lot of people's pick to kind of explode. After ending up at Arkansas last year, he didn't quite do so. Bounced back this summer. He's been outstanding to start the year, hitting over 400, six doubles and five home runs. Senior Jared Wagner, similarly, 390, nine home runs. And then another transfer in center fielder, Tavian Josenberger from Kansas, has also been really good, 346, plays great defense, his speed really plays well. And again, Kendall Diggs and Stovall are two outstanding sophomores. So this is, and then LSU, obviously, I don't really know what more we can say about LSU. They're really good. They're really complete. They're the best team in college baseball.
Dylan Cruz getting on base almost two thirds of the times he goes up to plate? I think it's 65, or I think he's 656 on base percentage right now.
I was going to say, I think it's 25 walks to 10 Ks. He's got 10 doubles and 6 home runs in 21 games. And then Tommy White has also really – the ironic thing about Tommy White is he kind of started off slow, and he's been absolutely raking since. He's hitting 410 with 6 home runs. And like we said, of course, their freshmen are hitting well too, with Jared Jones hitting at 365 and Kling at 327. Jones actually looks like the most – impressive power hitter on the roster, just from a sheer raw power standpoint. And then the mound, Paul Skeens, I think he's the best starting pitcher in college baseball. He's got 59 strikeouts to 4 walks in 30 innings. He's got a fantastic mound presence just watching him pitch. He is not scared of anybody. He was talking about how the A&M environment, which I thought in watching that series was pretty raucous. He came away thinking that it was, I don't want to mince words, he was, I think his quote was, he was expecting a little bit more, which I thought, I was like, you know, that was a very hostile environment that he went into, and he just dominated fastball up to 101 plus slider. Christian Little's been great out of the bullpen. And then Ty Floyd, Chase Shores, and then Thatcher Hurd has really, really thrown the ball well as of late. So with a home field advantage at the box, it's going to be hard not to give an advantage to LSU in any series this year. But I think in a series like this, where they've got a red hot Arkansas team, that's a very complete team on both sides of the baseball. They're fresh off a sweep of Auburn and a mercy rule win over SEMO yesterday, Southeast Missouri State, in their midweek. I think I've got to give the advantage to the Tigers, like I will until they show me for whatever reason not to give them the advantage. But this is going to be a really, really fun series to watch. It's about as high quality baseball as you're going to find at the collegiate level, I think. And it sets up LSU. They then welcome Tennessee to the box before making a trip to South Carolina, and their schedule eases up, I guess you could say, a little bit. I don't really like to say that it eases up ever in the SEC, but they don't have a weekend where they face Tennessee or Florida after that. So a really fun series. These are two teams who are Omaha contenders, national championship contenders. And I'm really looking forward to it.
So the thing about Skeens and saying that is that he's not going to face a hostile environment by like whatever it is that he's expecting, that the people have told him, like, oh, this is what you get on the road in the SEC, unless he like gives the other team more. So if he wants to see what it's like to like really go on the road and like really face a hostile environment, he's gonna have to like walk a couple guys. Like, you gotta give the opposing fans something to work with, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think he needed at least one ball five chant to really experience.
Like, if you're not gonna do that, you're not gonna get the experience. So it's just a matter of like, do you wanna involve the fans? Then you gotta get some base runners on. You gotta give them a reason to get something going. If you're gonna go out there and throw like 6 or 7 scoreless innings every night with 11 Ks, like, no, they're not gonna be very much into it, because they're gonna be so far behind on the scoreboard, it's not gonna. They're going to have moved on, man. So that I enjoyed that quote from him, but then I thought about it. I was like, well, Paul, you gotta work with these fans if you're looking to, and he's probably not looking to see it, but if you're looking to see it, you gotta work with them a little bit. Arkansas on a 14 game winning streak right now. They've played really, really well. Peter did a great job of illustrating why they've been playing so well. I think one intriguing aspect of this weekend for the Hogs is they have not played a true road game yet. And so, you know, we're talking about fans, we're talking about what the environment in the box is going to be. They haven't done that yet. And it's an older team, but it's also a team with a lot of newness to it. And, you know, playing a road series at LSU is a little bit different than, you know, going to Arlington on opening weekend and playing some neutral site games against Texas, TCU, and Oklahoma State. Like, yes, you went away from home, and so you did get that experience, but 10,000 angry fans in Baton Rouge is something else. So that's something to watch this weekend. They haven't even played a road midweek game. Like, they have nothing on the road. These are their first true road games of the season. We'll see how that impacts Arkansas come May. You know, I don't think it helped them last year when they didn't get to host. right now, if you look at RPI, it looks great for them. And if they keep winning, if they keep mixing in 14 game winning streaks, like, this is going to be a complete non-issue. But I do find it a little bit interesting that this is their first true road game coming up, and it's coming up at LSU. Like, I would have, you know, far be it from me to tell Dave Van Horn how to schedule or run his program or do anything, but I would have thought maybe I would have wanted to mix in a little something before we went to the box for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly, you can't get thrown into a hotter fire than a date with LSU, especially this year's LSU team at the box. So that's a great point. I didn't even realize they hadn't played a true road game. So that's going to be something.
All right, quickly before we get out of here, the Big Ten has a soft opening to its conference slate this weekend. Iowa's not in action in Big Ten play. Maryland's not in action in Big Ten play. Rutgers isn't in action in Big Ten play. Although two of those three play intriguing series, Maryland going to UCF and Rutgers is at UConn. Those are the three teams that are probably most likely to be regional teams from the Big Ten that, you know, we find to be most interesting. But I will say, Illinois at Nebraska intrigues me. Michigan State has played really well to this point this season. Mitch Jeb is playing really well. They open against Purdue. Michigan State's 10-7. They look feisty. And Ohio State 11-7 at Indiana 14-7. One of those teams at least is going to be a thorn in the side of the contenders and trying to make that jump into being a contender all season long. And so, interesting spot here for the Buckeyes and for the Hoosiers. Of course, Isaiah Coupette has been so good for Ohio State, something that IU is going to have to deal with. But the Hoosiers have played a lot better the last couple of weeks since they went home after, you know, playing on the road at Auburn, at Texas, and then in the Keith LeClair Classic at ECU. Competition has gone down. So I'm interested in seeing what we can learn about both the Hoosiers and the Buckeyes this weekend.
Yeah, that's an underrated one for sure. Indiana has won 9 of 10, with their only loss being at Kentucky in a midweek game. And I wouldn't necessarily put them in Iowa's, I guess, stratosphere. I wouldn't really comp them to Iowa quite yet, but they're a good team. Luke Sinard, 6'8 sophomore, has been outstanding on the mound. He's been a real revelation for them. They've gotten great pitching out of their bullpen with Ryan Kraft holding it down, Seth Menaze. And on offense, it's been led by, you know, veteran Philip Glasser, Tyler Cerny, Brock Tibbetts, who was a bit of a famous name last year. He's been playing well. So the Hoosiers are for sure an interesting team. Ohio State, like you said, they're led by Isaiah Coupe, who's a top 3-4 round draft prospect, however you want to slice it. And that's a very underrated series, as is in the non-conference ranks, Maryland heading down to UCF. Maryland desperately needs,
I think they both need that one.
Yeah, they really need that series. So a lot of sneaky series in the Big 12. I guess one other series that I'm excited for is North Carolina State at Boston College. North Carolina State is coming off of another disappointing weekend in which they lost 2 of 3 to UVA, which I'm not going to get too on the Wolfpack for losing to UVA, who I think is one of the best teams in the country. But in that same breath, they've lost 5 of 6 heading before that Sunday win. They had a nice win at UNC Wilmington last night in their midweek. But Boston College, I think, I don't want to speak prematurely on them. They lost yesterday against Northeastern. They had a great series win at Florida State. At the time of this recording, they're losing 7-3 in the fourth inning at home against Sacred Heart, which would be a brutal loss for the Eagles heading into their weekend series. So they have a lot of quality wins early on. It's gonna take a lot to ding their resume, but I'm just looking forward
to losing home games to Sacred Heart's not helping your RPI, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So today's result aside, which we'll see how that goes, I'm looking forward to seeing BC play another quality team and really watching them continue to prove themselves. And they've done a great job so far. So we'll see how this result holds, but BC NC State's another one on my radar.
Yeah, NC State needs something out of this weekend. If they drop their first three ACC series, that's a sizable hole that you're putting yourself in, and just not a great place. Some other intriguing series around the country in the Sun Belt. You've got Texas State at Coastal and Georgia Southern at Southern Miss. You know, teams that are expected to, you know, try and be in the mix for the NCAA tournament. So worth keeping an eye on there. I really like Rutgers at UConn. Rutgers is heated up, and UConn, we strongly considered ranking this week as two teams up in the northeast part of the country go at it. That's that is one worth watching. I guess a big weekend ahead for Northeast baseball with the series at Storrs and the series on Chestnut Hill. So a couple of intriguing ones in that part of the country. You know, it's just some other good ones here and there, but you know, really, I think we touched on the biggest ones of the weekend. I guess I should also throw out DBU going to Charlotte. Both of those teams could use a series win this weekend there in Conference USA action. So we'll have plenty to talk about when we come back next week for another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. We'll have it all covered throughout the weekend over at baseballamerica.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill, and Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty.
There we go.
So yeah, check us out on Twitter. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Hit that follow or subscribe button and rate and review if we can. We really appreciate it. Until next week, for Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.